Oh, you heard it right again. Let me tell you, I love the open to our show. This is Calvin and Campbell on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm Calvin Smith. He is Elijah Campbell to my right. Thank you so much for tuning in at 9:01 on this Saturday morning, February the 8th, to ESPN 102.5 The Game. We've got a good show for you lined up. We've got some more fun. We'll go back to Calvin and Campbell, attorneys at law, at 9:30. And we have our first ever guest on Calvin and Campbell in our second week as a show.
More history is being made.
ESPN college basketball analyst, former Vanderbilt basketball coach, Bryce Drew, will join us at 10:30. Of course, say something at 10 a.m. Mm-hmm. where we will say something.
Anything.
Maybe it's important. We'll get to that a little bit later on in the show. But Elijah, how are you?
Pretty good. If that John Cena hype beat doesn't get you awake and excited, nothing will. You don't have a pulse. So that gets a little life into me. I'm feeling great. Big sports Saturday today. We're getting into the heart of college basketball season.
It is a shame the Super Bowl happened, so there's no more football, unless you count the XFL, which a lot of people are talking about. But honestly, the XFL,
I don't know if I can get into it. It has to prove itself to me.
Like, it's like that. Those are okay. They're all. It's probably a better product, better teams than college football. Mm-hmm. But I don't care because I have a lot of emotional investment in college football
right.
to those schools and the tradition and the bands.
Exactly.
The XFL. Is it like single A baseball?
I think that's what they're trying to make it almost out to be. When Greg McElroy was on Darren Nonick and Chase yesterday, he mentioned it being almost like a good place for guys to get their reps that are fringe NFL players. But that's also like what the preseason is in the NFL. And
no one cares about the preseason.
Exactly. The only reason anybody watches the preseason is because we have been so football starved during the summer months.
And that's what they're betting on, us being football starved mm-hmm. and saying, oh, just let me see a game. Let me see one thing happen.
Maybe something involving football.
Maybe someone who's a former college star like Cardale Jones, and you say, oh, hey, I can watch Cardale Jones, see if he's any good now, even though if he was good,
He would be in the NFL.
He would be back with the Chargers or something like that. But other big things that happened this week, John Overton, the pride of John Overton High School, Mookie Betts.
Yeah, this is big.
Huge news, I'm sure you've heard. Boston Red Sox trade him, and David Price, the pride of Blackman High School.
Middle Tennessee baseball stars, both probably the biggest Middle Tennessee baseball stars ever from this area.
Maybe Sonny Gray's in there, but I mean, Sonny Gray doesn't have a Cy Young like David Price, an MVP like Mookie Betts.
Or a World Series championship.
Exactly. So Mookie Betts, David Price, on the Red Sox roster, no more. They get traded all the way out west to the Los Angeles Dodgers, who, if you forgot, have been to the World Series 3 years in a row now. And they just got even better.
Well, they didn't this year. They got upset by the team that ended up winning the World Series. But
right.
They should have. Here's the thing. Yeah, you're right. They were the best team in the National League for the last 3 years, maybe even four. Like this Dodgers team has been, I mean, the cream of the crop in the National League, and the rich just got richer. And
way richer.
I mean, you had an MVP who's in the prime of his career. You had another good left-handed arm to go in there with Clayton Kershaw and Walker Buehler.
You went to Vanderbilt.
And they made up for losing Hyunjin Ryu. So even the Dodgers' losses this offseason are completely wiped away. If this trade goes through, that's another weird thing about this trade right now, is that it's not technically official, and the MLBPA is ticked off about it too, and rightfully so. And I think it's all hindering on the health of one of the prospects that was involved.
Brewster Greaterol?
That was what?
I think that's the Twins prospect who is being sent to the Red Sox, and I think that's what it's contingent on, right?
It's his health. Yeah, it's something. It's with his health, and so the trade's not official yet. I have a hard
time
believing.
Which is crazy. If it's not gonna be done, then
we're approaching a week.
Then that's a big time problem. The president of the MLB Players Union said this deal needs to get done. It's very bad that it hasn't.
It's unethical.
It's very
unethical. That's the word he used too. That's the word he used specifically, because these guys, obviously, especially for guys like Mookie Betts and David Price, like, it's not like you're just moving into a new office down the hall. You're moving from Boston to Los Angeles.
Yes.
Or Los Angeles
and
to Minnesota.
And spring training's right around the corner.
Yeah, because Minnesota's involved in the deal too. So there are people having to be moved from Los Angeles, like Kenta Maeda moving from Los Angeles to Minnesota, or even Los Angeles, like Alex Verdugo, Los Angeles to Boston.
Yep.
These guys' lives are kind of like in limbo right now, even though I have a really, really, really hard time not seeing or seeing this trade not go through.
Oh, it's with all the hype and talk that's going on about that would be so bad for baseball.
That'd be a terrible look. An awful look.
All of the talk about baseball, I think, has been generally pretty good for the game. Mm-hmm. I mean, a cheating scandal probably isn't good for the game.
This is a distraction from that, though.
But this is, and it's good to have baseball in the news. We're talking about baseball right now, and it's relevant to us because we're in Middle Tennessee. But one other thing I wanted to bring attention to before we get too baseball heavy, because I did something came out about the Astros that I wanted to bring up as well.
Ah.
The Dodgers' top 100 prospects before the trade for Mookie Betts. Gavin Lux, Dustin May, Jeter Downs, Josiah Gray, Kiber Ruiz. All of those guys, it doesn't matter if you haven't heard of them, they're all in the top 100 of MLB.com's top 100 prospects.
Pretty good.
The Dodgers didn't give up a single one of their five top 100 prospects in professional baseball. If you don't know, having five in the top 100 is a lot. That'll put you in the top half of the league.
Automatically.
So you're telling me the team who's been the best team in the National League for 3 years now, has gone to multiple World Series in the last 5 years, has a very good farm system, rich with top-end talent, and they didn't give away any of them to go get David Price and Mookie Betts.
To get a former Cy Young winner and former MVP from a World Series team 2 years ago. That is insane. And that makes you wonder, like, what the hell is Boston thinking? What's going on with Boston in that regard?
Ryan Porth and I dedicated a whole edition of the Home Plate podcast that played this morning at 7 a.m. If you want to hear more about that, you can go find the Home Plate podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find your podcast. But another thing I quickly wanted to get to was the Astros scandal. And the Wall Street Journal came out with a report about an intern who came to the Astros front office. And he came in, showed the general manager, Jeff Luhnow, a PowerPoint presentation that featured the latest creation by the team's high-tech front office. This is coming straight from the Wall Street Journal, the first paragraph of their article. An Excel-based application programmed with an algorithm that could decode the opposing catcher's signs. It was called Codebreaker. So an intern for the Astros built something in Microsoft Excel. Not even some complex programming language that could decode and break opponent signs, and that's how they were able to do it so quickly that just all they had to do was type in the quick information they got, and boom, Codebreaker gave them what pitch was coming.
It gave them the most...
An intern, Elijah.
An intern with Microsoft Excel helped construct one of the biggest cheating scandals in the history of sports. That is incredible. He deserves a raise. Get him a job.
Oh, I'm sure. Oh, see, that was my first thought is, who is this intern? I want to know who he is. Is he still working in baseball?
Major League Baseball is like, oh, that's so bad, but like we need him.
Because if he's with another team, there were rumors other teams were doing this too. It wouldn't surprise me at all. Well, then you got another team who's cracking codes.
Yep. Oh, they're finding another way to win too. And that's my thing with baseball too, is like baseball is incredibly unique as a sport just because it has a history of cheating. Like, cheating is so ingrained in baseball, and even in professional sports it's getting that way too, when millions of dollars are on the line and the rewards are as lucrative as they have ever been in all these sports. The risks definitely, like, or the reward outweighs the risk of getting caught. Like the Astros, like, they used this, and they're even talking about the Codebreaker story on ESPN right now, or on SportsCenter.
Wow, stealing our content.
Stealing our content.
Thanks, SportsCenter.
How dare they? But you look at that, and it's, I mean, if you're the Astros, the thrill of winning that World Series, A.J. Hinch will never have the memory of winning that World Series erased. And he had that interview with Tom Verducci at MLB Network. And he obviously apologized. He's like, I think, in the future, like, we're not going to think of it as like a tainted title. If I'm him, I'm straight up just being like, no, man, yeah, I did it. I'd do it again because I won a World Series. And I have this fat World Series ring on my finger that you'll never.
A huge bonus check.
A huge bonus check. All this money that you'll never be able to take from me. I'm sorry if you didn't do it as well as we did. I, at this point, I feel like If teams knew they were doing this and they still didn't adapt, and if you still can't adapt and you know what's going on, what else, I don't know what else to tell you.
You bring up an interesting point that other teams were aware of this, and if they couldn't adapt with the Astros, then they're kind of playing at the same game. A fairer cheating game. I mean, obviously, yeah. Major League Baseball had to come out, and they have to outlaw this, and they have to punish whatever.
Right.
But I kind of see what you're saying there, even though I fundamentally disagree. But coming up next, we will get back on track to the local talk. Titans hire Jim Haslett to be the inside linebackers coach, which means they're not really going to have an official defensive coordinator.
Quote, unquote.
Is Mike Vrabel taking on too much responsibility? Does this worry us that the head coach is trying to be more involved in the everyday game plan? We'll get to that coming up next here on Calvin and Campbell on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to Calvin and Campbell here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hey, coming up later today on these very airwaves, Preds and Oilers. Pre-game starts at 5. Of course, we are the flagship of the Nashville Predators. Actually, me and Elijah will be part of that broadcast in some aspect. Elijah producing, me doing the highlights. So if you want to get a good chuckle, stay tuned to the end of the Preds broadcast, because I always have a little bit of a wrinkle up my sleeve with the final highlight mix for the game.
The Goofy Goober one last week, I think I was in tears laughing so hard. I just wasn't expecting that. Because you won't tell me what it is until it's time to play it. And I play it, and the first thing I heard was the Goofy Goober intro from the SpongeBob movie, of course.
Rock.
For those who have not seen, have not cultured themselves enough to watch the SpongeBob movie, that is obviously the main song of that movie. I was in tears. I was laughing so hard. That's a song I have not heard in many moons. Many, many moons.
And I was very proud of that one. And coming up on 102.1 The Ville, men's and women's basketball, TSU takes on Murray State. That starts at 5:15. And on 94.9 Game 2, Kentucky and Tennessee, that's coming up at 10:30. And MTSU and Rice at 4:30. Lots of basketball and hockey on these airwaves. Of course, after Calvin and Campbell ends, you can tune in over there. But what we're going to talk about this segment, the Titans hire Jim Haslett to be inside linebackers coach. Anthony Midget gets hired to coach the defensive backs. No official defensive coordinator being hired to replace Dean Pease.
Nor will they. They've announced that the staff is finalized.
Which, Dean Pease leaves big shoes to fill. I mean, he did a very good job last season with a defense that was injured.
Banged up all year.
Malcolm Butler goes down. Adoree Jackson's in and out. They really struggle to get pass rush. But that same defense still held the Ravens to 12 points. Still held Tom Brady to 13 points.
And really was one of the driving points of that run, that miraculous playoff run.
The backbone of it. They didn't lose until the defense broke against the eventual Super Bowl champion, Kansas City Chiefs.
And who would have broken anybody on planet Earth.
Breaking anybody's back because their quarterback is a human cheat code.
Yeah, that's another thing, that we forgot to discuss in the first segment, too, was the Super Bowl, and that's probably one of the greatest offenses we'll ever see.
Oh, yes. But and good thing is, we get to see him again next year.
They're kind of
maybe only minus Sammy Watkins.
Yeah, and they can probably draft a receiver to fill in that role, too, because the Chiefs have such great eyes for talent. But the Titans, defensively, Dean Pease did about as good of a job as you can to get yourself in the game against that Titans team. I'm intrigued with the Jim Haslett hire. As a lifelong Saints fan, that was the last Saints head coach before Sean Payton, which is crazy enough to think that Sean Payton has been coaching for that long, that the last coach before him was Jim Haslett, who's been around like 20 different organizations or stops, I guess, since his time in New Orleans. It's obvious hyperbole, but he's been around a little bit. He's bounced around since that last head coaching gig. But I like Haslett as a coach, a good coach, and I figured that he is going to have a greater role than just linebackers coach, because Mike Vrabel is probably going to be taking on a little too much responsibility if he is doing the defensive coordinator duties.
But he's going to be doing a lot of that still, being involved in the game plan and the implementation, and saying, Arthur Smith, hey, you proved yourself. You take a lot more of that.
100% that is all yours. Yeah, the offense is all yours. That might work, but
How much does it work? How much does it worry you? Because you say it might work. And for me, like, it doesn't really concern me that much unless Arthur Smith does a really good job and gets another job.
He was already kind of, his name was kind of floating out there a little bit.
Ian Rappaport floated his name out there on, he was on some, I guess I would say, long lists for head coaching jobs.
Right.
So it only concerns me if Arthur Smith does a good enough job to go somewhere else, because then, oh man, Mike Vrabel's back in the same spot where he's kind of got to be involved on both sides in the process of acclimating to a new offensive coordinator and all these things, and that's just kind of the struggle of having a defensive-minded head coach, is that if your offensive coordinator goes, then you've got to find somebody to replace him, and then you've got to kind of go back to focusing on the offense. So I wouldn't call it a more risky move, because I don't think risk is the right word for what he's doing, but focusing on the defense more just creates more of a dependency on Arthur Smith.
It does. Yeah, oh, it 100% does. And that's part of, like, fundamentally, I've always believed, like, in coaching staffs, you don't want to stretch yourself too thin. That's why there's a plethora of reasons why Bill O'Brien, being the GM and head coach, is absolutely stupid.
And offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator.
That guy doing everything.
And every area scout.
It's like, guys like Bill O'Brien try to do everything at once, but in that process, get nothing done proficiently. And my thing with Mike Vrabel is...
Except
have a good quarterback who will bail you out.
And DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, having an offense with weapons like that will bail you out. Especially if a guy, and there are guys that he didn't, I guess, well, yeah, he had a hand in drafting Watson. But that's beside the point, is that my thing is Vrabel, as good as he is, great of a defensive mind as he is, as he sat in some of the greatest defensive meeting rooms in the history of the NFL when he was under Romeo Crennel and Bill Belichick in New England back in the day. And as experienced as he is, and I have no doubt of his defensive abilities.
Even though, because people will bring up, like, oh, he's a terrible defensive coordinator. Look at what he did with the Texans. No talent on that roster.
None. Outside J.J. Watt, who is never reliable to stay healthy for an entire season.
Yes.
He's working with very little in Houston.
Scheme and the Jimmys and Joes on the field, the players have to be working in conjunction. And if you don't have one, it's going to be bad.
And my only concern is if Vrabel stretches himself too thin, you do have that big reliance on Arthur Smith. And he's doing more, too. Everyone's having to do more. Why not make life easier on yourself and be able to allocate some of those responsibilities? It's a fundamental thing. I almost don't care who it is. Being able to allocate responsibilities as a team and working together in that conjunction, I think usually just makes life easier on everybody else.
So then, I mean, I guess I was kind of surprised they weren't going to even bring someone in for the title of defensive coordinator. Like, that's kind of what's interesting to me, is that they didn't even promote Shane Bowen or make Jim Haslett or something like that the defensive coordinator in name, but knowing Vrabel was going to have a bigger hand in that or something like that. Like, they're just basically saying, we're going to do a collective group effort, but Vrabel's going to be leading the charge on it. And it just, I wonder what kind of a, I mean, it's not going to have a, there's not really going to be a power structure issue there, because Mike Vrabel's the head coach and he's going to get his way. He's going to do what he wants. Obviously, they can still have a collaborative environment within that, but not having that title, I wonder how that affects the chain of communication, the line of communication. When they want something done, Mike Vrabel wants something, and then he doesn't go to the defensive coordinators. He just goes straight to the position coaches at this point, or how does that work? How will that affect communication? How is that going to change their daily routine from last season to this season with your head coach taking over those responsibilities? Because I think it's inevitable that in some aspect it's going to change Mike Vrabel's daily schedule, which in turn will affect a few other things at the very least.
Oh yeah, and if Mike Vrabel's daily schedule is affected, everyone on the staff's daily schedule is affected. And a good example that I guess I was trying to think of earlier in terms of coaches working in a collaborative effort to get things done is the Kansas City Chiefs. Obviously, like we said, the Jimmys and the Joes work in conjunction with the X's and the O's. The Chiefs obviously had the dogs, the talent, the guns, the ammunition, whatever you want to call it. But they also had not one great offensive mastermind, but two. Andy Reid, as great as an offensive mind as he is, benefited a lot from Eric Bieniemy, being able to call plays and him being able to trust Eric Bieniemy in doing that, even though Andy Reid could easily do that.
They both did it. They both worked in conjunction so well.
And that's what made their offense. I watched a video this week from the Super Bowl, and it was during a review of – it was right before that third and 15 conversion that where Mahomes hit Tyreek
Hill. Took like a nine-step drop.
Yeah. That's what he needed to do to buy time against that pass rush. It was incredible. But Pat Mahomes was mic'd up, and he goes over to Eric Bieniemy, and he goes, I want to run WASP. And he goes, okay, well, down in distance, you want to run WASP. And Mahomes goes, I don't care. I just want to run it. And he trusted him to run that play. And WASP was the name of the route that Tyreek Hill ran.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, I don't care. I don't care what the down distance is, whether we get this catch or not, this next play, I want to do that. And Eric Bieniemy didn't even have to ask Andy Reid because they're on the same page. They've been on the same page all season long. You work in conjunction like that. Andy Reid can worry about something else in that moment. He can worry about talking to his defense, or he can worry about doing other things in that moment rather than having to worry about what's my quarterback thinking, what's my offensive coordinator thinking, what play does he want to call. It's that level of trust where you can be able to collaborate with all of your coaches to be able to get things done like that. And that's kind of where not having that defensive coordinator kind of concerns me a little bit. Even though I know Mike Vrabel is more than capable as a defensive mind, that's kind of where it gets me a little bit.
I think where this tests him the most is his ability to be a great communicator and a great organizer of everything going on his defensive staff. Because I think when you don't have somebody fully dedicated to that role full time, then you've got to really have everything in your daily plan set and how you're going to convey the message and communicate it throughout the levels it needs to go through to implement something. So if you want something done, then it's on the guy who's responsible for that. So there has to be these clearly defined roles and a very open and clear line of communication to ensure there's no error within your process, within your chain of command. Because like you've said, I think you bring up a great point where it does require more of you. And it might stretch you a little thin. It's going to test his organization and communication skills the most, if you ask me.
And leadership, which I think if there's anybody that's equipped to be able to handle that, Mike Vrabel is a proven leader. He knows how to handle people. I love hearing people that are listening to people that cover this team and talk about Mike Vrabel's relationship with players. This is going to test that as well, because he's going to have to be able to trust players and coaches, especially on the offensive side of the ball, to be able to kind of to get their stuff together, to get everything organized and get it together while he takes a bigger responsibility on the defensive side of the ball. And also, like, I keep coming back to the Jim Haslett hire too, because I actually really like that, because Jim Haslett's defenses in New Orleans did a lot with less.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they weren't the best defenses, and obviously the defenses got worse whenever he left, but he's a very underrated defensive coach. And if that's a good person to collaborate with, even though Mike
a veteran mind,
exactly,
to replace the veteran mind you had in Dean Pease,
exactly. So, and if you're going to be able to, or if you're going to accept the responsibility of more responsibility, one of the best things you could have done is at least put another mind like Jim Haslett in the room.
All right, coming up next here on Calvin and Campbell, we will go to the courtroom. The prosecution and the defense will take the stand and state their cases in Calvin and Campbell, Sports Attorneys at Law. That's coming up next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. This is Calvin and Campbell here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and it's 9:30, so that means it's time for our weekly segment, Calvin and Campbell, Sports Attorneys at Law. There we go, the Law and Order sounder as we kick it off.
A classic.
Now the case, so I'll kind of have to play the role of the judge here and the prosecution, but that's okay. So the case at hand today is the Andre Iguodala saga. If you haven't heard about it, basically Andre Iguodala got moved to the Memphis Grizzlies this offseason, and he was pretty clear. He's not going to play for the Memphis Grizzlies, despite having a contract that would say he should be playing for the Memphis Grizzlies, but Andre Iguodala could still get his money that's guaranteed, even though he'd never played a game for the Memphis Grizzlies. So, now, if the prosecution will take the stand, that would be me as well, I'm going to say, Andre Iguodala, why wouldn't you play? I get it. Like, Memphis isn't, you know, the sexiest destination. It's not the most fun place in the world. The Grizzlies were not expected to be good at all. But if you go out there and do your job, you could get traded to a contender. And then you could also play basketball, which is what you're supposed to kind of enjoy doing and love doing, and play basketball, even if it's for a bad team, and take on a leadership role on a young team, and then just be gone and go on your merry way and do your thing. You're supposed to be doing this. It's in your contract. It's what you're getting paid to do. Does that not kind of, I don't know, I guess bother you a little bit that you're not playing the game, Andre Iguodala? All I'm saying is, you know, you didn't have to like it. You could demand a trade, and they might have very well traded you earlier if you would have shown up. Actually, I think that's very plausible, that if he shows up and he's like, look, I'm not happy here, I'm sticking it out, but I'm not going to be good for morale, get me out of here. That might have been like a kind of check move to get the Grizzlies to move you sooner. Andre Iguodala, I just feel like morally, if you get traded, just play. You don't even have you don't have to like it. You don't even have to do much. But just go play. The defense, Elijah Campbell, you may now take the stand.
My client, Andre Iguodala, hashtag free Iggy. Here's the deal. And this is where Memphis should have known better. When you traded for Andre Iguodala, you told him that we want to use you as a trade piece. They want to flip him. They're good buyers in that sense, because you knew you might be able to get something out of him. Andre Iguodala made it clear that he had no intentions on playing for this team. If you know this guy has zero intention on showing up, why are you upset? Why are your players? Why is Dylan Brooks and Ja Morant that upset?
Because Dylan Brooks would go play for somebody else.
Because Dylan Brooks hasn't proven himself in the NBA. Andre Iguodala is a three-time champion, a finals MVP. Guy has been in the league for over a decade and a half.
But that doesn't make him exempt from playing for the team he's under contract to play for.
Well, when the team and the player have that agreement that we're going to use you as a trade piece, why would he even play? What's the point of playing? If you're Andre Iguodala,
because he's a professional basketball player. That's what he's supposed to be doing. That's his job.
It's a business. This happens all the time.
It's a business, exactly.
All the time.
It's kind of befuddling that he can still get money and not play.
It is. That's professional sports. But if you're Andre Iguodala too, why even risk the chance of getting hurt? Because, well, imagine he plays for the Grizzlies, tears an ACL. Well, you ain't playing for a contender. Your career's probably over. He wants to play for a contender. I think he has earned his spot in the NBA to be able to do that. Andre Iguodala is a proven commodity in the NBA. Hall of Famer? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. We have to define our parameters of Hall of Fame. But this guy is well-respected in the league. He's earned it.
Except by Memphis.
Because they got their feelings
hurt. He betrayed Memphis.
Memphis betrayed him. Because honestly, if you tell him you're going to use him as a trade piece, why don't you trade him in the offseason? If you know, they traded for Dwight Howard not too long ago and had zero intention on playing him. No one got upset at the Grizzlies. Dwight Howard's a professional basketball player. No one got upset at them that they didn't put him out in a uniform, which, of course, I mean, with the way Dwight Howard was at that point in his career, good thing for Memphis fans they didn't put him out in a uniform. But I also, and from Iggy's standpoint too, wanting to play for a contender, and Dylan Brooks and Ja Morant getting their feelings hurt that he didn't consider Memphis a contender.
Sending some awesome tweets.
I don't care that you're 508th seed in the West. That's awesome. That's incredible. For your standards, you are ahead of schedule. Way ahead of schedule. But Andre Iguodala does not want to spend his last couple, and I don't blame him for wanting to spend his last year, potentially, getting swept in the first round. This guy has bigger fish to fry.
That team's not going to make the playoffs.
The Grizzlies, they're in the 8th seed right now. But I'd be terrified of the Portland Trailblazers if I were them, because Damian Lillard is going on a hot streak right now that has been,
like,
I mean,
42 points a game, 10 assists a game in the last 10 or something like that.
Shooting 50% from three. Yeah. It is outrageous how good he's been, and they're only going to get better because Jusuf Nurkic and Zach Collins will be coming back from injury too. When that happens, they are going to be dangerous.
But what we're getting at here kind of on the overarching scale is it okay for an athlete to say, you know what, no, I got traded here, I'm not going to play for them? Because I just don't think that that's a good precedent to be set for any league.
Oh, the precedent's already been set. But you don't have to worry about setting the precedent.
It's not one to continue or even have in the first place.
We have to think of it this way, too, is that these people are also people. Professional sports are one of the few jobs on the planet where your employer will push you to live other places, and at the drop of a hat.
I don't feel bad for them at all. They're making $20 million.
Making a lot of money.
I do not care. I do not feel bad for anybody who has to relocate because they're making $20 million.
Their problems are different than ours, but obviously. I mean, I would like to be making that money. Everyone would like to be making that money. But Andre Iguodala got done dirty by his own team by sending him to Memphis to pretty much dump.
You do get done dirty if he gets sent to Memphis. No disrespect to Memphis. It's a very nice town. I've been there multiple times.
It's not San Francisco.
It's not Miami.
Or Miami, which he's a big winner there. No problems getting traded
to
Miami.
It's not even Nashville.
Yeah. But
it's still that I just...
Money wasn't the problem, though. That's the thing. It's like money wasn't the problem. It was...
Well, actually,
where he wanted to play with.
He could do it because of the money. I just don't like how that feels when I see a guy who gets moved to a team, and then it's his job to play. Go and play.
His job
that
when he
is
signed the contract was to play for the Golden State Warriors.
But trades happen all the time, and I just don't like how you can say, okay, well, I don't like that team, so I'm not going to play for them. Like, that's kind of the nature of the entire business and how it all functions, is that when you get traded, well, suck it up and go. That's why you make so much money to do what you do, in part because the entertainment value is worth that much money, and two,
it is worth that much money.
It's a tough job.
But the money
he's
making...
Because you're always on the road.
The money he's
do
making...
Do your job, Andre Iguodala. Just do it.
It goes two ways.
You don't even have to do it well.
Because the team can just cut somebody like that.
They should have just cut him. They should have.
Which is what they should have. If they're able to do that, the player should have some control in this relationship as well. Because what the money the player is making for the team actually greatly outweighs the money he is making. These teams...
Well, yeah, I mean, but that's kind of how it
works. Andre Iguodala's contract is nothing compared to even what the Memphis Grizzlies rack in. My thing is, too, it goes both ways. And if you tell a guy that you're going to flip him to a contender... Before this, like when you trade for him, you got to honor that as well as he does.
No,
the Grizzlies are just as much at fault for not doing that at all. And I think that sets tons of bad precedents have been set in pro sports. Every year in the NFL, guys hold out all the time.
I'm fine with
holdouts. They're on contract,
but you need to show up.
If you're holding out,
yes.
Isn't that the whole point of a holdout? Is
not really because you can hold out and still have an effect.
I don't know, but the whole point of the holdout is, like, I'm not playing until
get this settled. Because I think it's different to hold out from something like training camp and then show up on day one and, like, not be ready to go or something.
Well, then you have no leverage.
Yeah, but I think you still do because they want you there.
Well, if they want you there, if they know you're going to be there on week one, why would they sign you to the deal you want?
Because you're not there. It will still push them to do it. It will incentivize them to do it. That's more of an issue in football versus basketball, because football you're dealing with a lot more guaranteed money issues.
I mean, Melvin Gordon didn't show up when it was time to show up.
And it didn't matter one bit.
Yeah, that's another. Yeah, we've had that discussion 1,000 times. Le'Veon Bell didn't. Like, this happens so frequently.
I'm just thinking, a lot of times holdouts don't even have an effect, because a lot of teams can find a way to move on.
A lot of them can.
There's got to be more civil ways to go about these things than not showing up or front offices being petty.
I'll say this. Iguodala not showing up is a little petty, but it's also just as petty for the Memphis Grizzlies to keep him around and almost try to coerce him into playing for a team he had no intention on playing for. B, was told that he wasn't going to be there long because he was going to be used as an asset. Because Andre Iguodala wouldn't have made them win any more or any less than he would on this team or off this team. And it really doesn't matter. And I don't understand why the Grizzlies got so upset when they made that agreement, and the players also getting that upset, is when it was understood when the deal happened, he did what he said he was going to do. He didn't lie to you. He didn't say, all right, well, we'll sit around and I'll wait for you guys to trade me like you want to. Use me as a trade piece. I get it. I just won't play. Because why waste your time?
I wonder what the market for Andre Iguodala would have been like then. But that's getting a little bit into the weeds.
The fact that he's making much right now, it wasn't good because he's a high price tag, and the Heat are paying him. They extended him 2 years, $30 million. True. So he's getting $15 million a year. And that's for a guy his age and his lack of production the last couple of years, which part of that might have been because he didn't have to be very productive during the regular season, is a little pricey. So I don't mind Memphis not buying him out and trying to trade for him and get anything. What they got back from him isn't a bad return. It's not going to save your season, like make or break you, but but it's something in return. And that's what they should have done all along instead of dragging their feet and waiting till the trade deadline halfway through the season. I understand how there be no tears shed for Andre Iguodala because he's a multimillionaire and he makes a ton of money to play a kid's game. I shed no tears for the Grizzlies players and that organization for failing to do what they said they were going to do at the beginning of the season.
I'll give you that. I will certainly give you that the Grizzlies should have done better because for some reason after that trade, I saw a lot of people like praising the Grizzlies front office.
No.
We're not even going to talk about the Grizzlies anymore.
They created their own drama in this aspect. And I understand, like, the first Dylan Brooks comment, I would never take out, is kind of taken out of context because he did say Iguodala's a good player. I can't wait to play him because I'd like to show him what we're about. I get that. But being overly sensitive or too sensitive, like some of the aggressive tweets, the liking of the aggressive tweets, and the public display of
childish,
of
petty.
Pettiness.
You're an adult millionaire.
You don't know this guy. You don't know what you're missing because he's never actually played on your team and he's doing what he said he was going to do. Why be upset?
All right. I think that's enough Memphis Grizzlies talk
for one
day.
We reached our settlement, an in-court settlement.
Coming up next, National Signing Day in college football was this week. We talked about this a little bit last week, but I think the question still stands. Do you care how well the Tennessee Volunteers rank in recruiting rankings? Because I don't at all because it hasn't mattered for them recently. We will get into that here on Calvin and Campbell on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Are back. Just ask Philip Fulmer. He said as much on National Signing Day this week. Philip Fulmer declares the Vols are back and they're going to take a bite out of everybody they play this upcoming season. This is Calvin and Campbell on ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm Calvin Smith alongside Elijah Campbell. And we're talking about Rocky Top, Tennessee. Here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, the Vols finish with the 10th ranked recruiting class in the country, Elijah. A pretty good haul. I mean, the
big day, very big day.
A big day. No 5-star recruits, 13 4-star recruits per 24/7 sports, 23 total commits in the class. Obviously, a lot of people go when they talk about recruiting rankings and all this stuff about how
naturally
you need to get good players on the field to win, and that's absolutely true. I won't deny the relationship between getting good players and winning, right? I mean, Georgia, mm-hmm. Alabama, LSU, Ohio State, what do these teams all have in common? They all finish in the top five every single year in recruiting rankings. It's not that hard when you do those schools either. But the Vols finished 10th. Hey, maybe this is a sign of things to come for the Vols. Well, in the past, the Vols have also recruited pretty freaking well. Last year, they were 13th. The year before that, they did pretty good as well, coming in at 21st. Not the best, still top 25 in the country, though. You would think if you're recruiting in the top 25 in the country, you should be better than they've been, and that was through the coaching change with Jeremy Pruitt. And then we all know in the Butch Jones era, they finished top 5 one year.
Had a ridiculous recruiting class that has replenished some teams with good NFL talent.
That's very true. And excuse me if I don't care one bit about how the Tennessee Vols recruit, because it takes a lot more than just the players you get on the field. What mm-hmm. makes Ed Orgeron good? He converted that into a good system where he could utilize the players he had. Obviously, we know Nick Saban uses his talent very, very well. The Vols haven't shown any ability to do that yet. I don't care how well they finished last season. I need to see more from Jeremy Pruitt before I think that the Vols are back.
Yeah, I mean, just getting a top 10 recruiting class doesn't make you back, and I say that with air quotes here. It's going to take a lot more, and I agree. Like, it has to be proven. And the guys, they got some dogs in this class, man. Malachi Wideman might be one of the freakish athletes. He could play on the basketball team. That guy's got some
hops.
I
saw the highlights of him.
That guy's got some hops.
They flipped him from Florida State, right?
Yep, they did. And that guy's got some hops. He could be in a dunk contest one day. And what did they lose on the offensive side of the ball from this year to next year? Receivers. You lose
Marquez
Juwan
Callaway.
Jennings. You lose Marquez Callaway. Two NFL-type talents
on
the
outside.
You could
just throw the ball to Marquez Callaway anywhere. As long as it was in the air, he would jump up and catch it.
Get it. And my thing is, with the talent standpoint, is Tennessee had plenty of talent on this year's team. It was a talented roster. It didn't save them from losing to Georgia State because they came to the game unprepared. And I promise you, they overlooked them. I don't care what anyone in that building says. They overlooked them. And that was an inexcusable loss, considering you had the entire summer to prepare for that awful Georgia State team and still laid an egg. Granted, they got better throughout the year, and they started beating up on bad teams. But beating up on bad teams is better than losing to bad teams, as they've learned in September. I got to see them do it against the Alabamas and the Georgias, or at least be competitive, be able to be in these games to prove any type of faith or restore any type of faith in Jeremy Pruitt and the coaching staff. Is, yeah, this is great. They're getting recruits, but the Tennessee brand name almost sells itself sometimes.
Oh, absolutely.
And the biggest reason that, as even, I think fans should be excited a little bit, because being in the top 10 is better than not being in the top 10 in terms of bringing in talent.
Yep.
But you need to hold off and yield on the whole Tennessee is back thing, because what conference they play in?
You know, let me get into that real quick.
Southeastern Conference.
Because the Vols being 10th is great, right? They had 13 four-star recruits. Their average recruit rank was almost a four-star. Just scroll up a few spots.
Mm-hmm.
Florida has had a five-star with 17 four-stars.
Mm-hmm.
That's more than Tennessee, with a higher average recruit ranking. Go to Texas A&M, two fives, 13 fours, another higher average recruit ranking. Go up, number four this year, LSU, three fives, 14 four-star recruits, another higher average recruiting ranking.
Loaded.
Then Alabama and Georgia. 4 5-star recruits in each of their classes. 15 and 17 4-stars. 15 for Georgia, 17 for Alabama. Both of which had a higher average recruit ranking than the Vols. The Vols can recruit well, but they're not recruiting great. And
they're
what are the top teams doing? Great. So they're not competing with them on the field. They're not recruiting at the same elite caliber level as these other teams in the top of the SEC, which means the coaching staff has to make up for that.
Mm-hmm. We're going to see what he's about. It's
a tall task they're facing in the toughest conference in college football.
Mm-hmm.
And even what they're doing well, they aren't doing at the level of the absolute best schools. Jeremy Pruitt has his work cut out for him. Phillip Fulmer, all the respect in the world for what you've accomplished.
And I love the enthusiasm. I'd rather have the enthusiasm than not have the enthusiasm, but we're here to play the game of reality.
But selling hype got your program nowhere with Butch Jones.
It created expectations.
Don't go out in front of your rabid, crazy, and passionate fan base and respect Devol's fans for being how they are.
It's gone through a lot.
But saying that,
a ton.
Saying that puts all the pressure in the world on your coach.
Yeah, and
unnecessary pressure that will backfire if he doesn't meet every bit of the expectation that's being set. It's unnecessary, and I love it, though, because it's hype and it gives me something to talk about, but it's a risky move from Phillip Fulmer.
Actually, I kind of like it from Phillip Fulmer in terms of putting pressure on Jeremy Pruitt, because the pressure is going to be there regardless. This isn't Arizona State. This isn't
Vanderbilt.
Even Michigan State or Vanderbilt. The Tennessee head coaching job exudes this pressure. You absorb all of this pressure once you get in that position.
He takes on the weight of Derek Dooley, Lane Kiffin, and Butch Jones.
The job itself carries a ton of weight because of the passionate fan base, because of the money that program generates. The pressure of winning is immense. That is natural to the position. Phillip Fulmer understands that better than anyone, and that pressure is what got him out of the head coaching gig. That pressure is what got him boosted out of there when they lost to Wyoming on a homecoming game. He knows what it's like to win at Tennessee and what it's like to lose at Tennessee. And I think his trust with Jerry Pruitt, or being able to get on the same page with someone he is wired similarly with, is good for Pruitt. I think that adding that pressure for him only should make him understand the task at hand. That's good for them. And it's good for the fan base because it's going to bring in money. The hype brings in the revenue. It would have done it if they were 5-7 because the Tennessee fan base shows up regardless of whether this team is good or not. They're always going to be there. They're always going to show up. But when we play the game of reality, as exciting as this top 10 recruiting class is, you aren't even top 6 in your conference.
It could backfire quickly.
Exactly.
Definitely backfire. We've seen the power of the Vols fan base. But coming up next here on ESPN 125 The Game, we have
Say that to me. Say that to anybody. Say it to somebody.
Say Something coming up 10 a.m. This is Calvin and Campbell on ESPN 102.5 The Game.